How much internet is too much? When the lines between reality and fantasy begin to blur. This is the story of Grant Amato and his family murders. Hey there, and welcome to Valkyrie, your podcast for true crime stories. I'm your host, Dee. Today we travel to Seminole County, Florida, to a town whose name I'm probably going to butcher, Chuliota. It's a small town about 25 miles from Orlando, and its name means Isle of Pines. Today we're going to talk about a kid named Grant Tiernan Amato. Grant was born in 1989 and was now almost 30 in 2019 when our discussion takes place for today. His parents, Chad and Margaret, had three kids, Grant, Jason, and Cody. And while Jason lived elsewhere in 2019 because he was the oldest of the three and he no longer lived at home, which is probably for the better, as we're going to see from the story, Cody was still very, very close with his younger brother, Grant. Grant wanted to be just like his brother, Cody, following him to University of Central Florida, where they both studied nursing. They both joined the weightlifting teams, and it's safe to say that Grant really looked up to his older brother. Now, Cody would complete college and earn his degree, but Grant drops out early, although he was able to find work in the healthcare industry, working at Advent Health in Orlando as a nurse at one point. Once Grant was starting to earn his own money and being kind of a young kid at the time, he began spending it on some things that made him happy, like a Bulgarian cam model named Sylvie. Now, it's not what you think here. What you're going to hear is her name a lot, and she's really not involved other than just kind of reaping the benefits from a kid who came from a well-off family who really didn't seem to have any concern over money. Grant's job in healthcare would be fairly short-lived, though. He would be suspended in June of 2018 after he was suspected of administering propofol to agents without approval. Propofol, sound familiar? It's that drug that Michael Jackson was well known for taking and is believed to have played a large part in his death. The hospital would file a police report and say that 8 vials of propofol were found in 2 rooms that were under Grant's care. And the value of these vials alone was enough that it was considered as grand theft at that point. And he was even caught on camera committing to the theft. His reasoning for doing it? He didn't feel that the patients were receiving enough care and were relaxed enough and needed some additional drugs to help calm them. As they questioned Grant about the theft, he mentioned that he himself was having suicidal thoughts as the police were called. Although it would appear that the charges were dropped in this case later on, this is kind of like our first warning sign from Grant that of a potential serious mood disorder that leads with depression and continues into obsession. Following his job loss, Grant would decide to pursue his other passion, video games. His parents would actually support this and help him purchase equipment to help him stream his gaming through Twitch in hopes that he would gain followers and ultimately support him long term. His parents and brother would lend Grant their credit cards to help his channel get off the ground. But Grant wouldn't put much effort into his channel, only making a few $100 ultimately, because he wasn't very consistent with his uploading. Interesting enough, though, the family credit cards kept racking up additional charges, even though he wasn't necessarily using them for streaming. Weird, huh? Now, these charges would not be for his career pursuit. Instead, it was for Sylvie, that Bulgarian cam model. Grant had begun having an online relationship, well, in his eyes anyway, with this woman, Sylvie. And of course, he had to impress her. And he does it with money, ultimately sending her over $200,000 to try and prove his love for her. He does say things to her like, "Please, pretty please, send me one of your videos. I don't like buying your stuff. It makes me feel weird. Would you just please send me one, though?" And he was apparently easily spending $1,000 a day to see Sylvie in sexually explicit videos. He would send her lingerie and sex toys and then pay to watch her and see her wearing and using these items. His family would push him to overcome his addiction and curb his spending, but it was no use. Obsession had already set in. But he had essentially stolen the $200,000 from his family by then, spent entirely on Sylvie in a 3-month window. They agreed to not press charges and paid for it by taking out another mortgage on the family home to help cover those expenses. Grant's brother Cody even agreed to help him with his addiction and sent him to a 60-day rehab stint for pornography addiction, which apparently cost him about $15,000. He would only spend a few days in that luxury facility and leave, claiming that he didn't have an addiction and therefore didn't need to be there. Chad, Grant's father, he agreed to let him back in the house, but it came with a 2-page list of rules, but for the most part just contained 3 conditions. 1, he had to get a job, makes sense. Two, he had to go see a therapist, which might be hard if he doesn't think anything is wrong. And three, he was no longer allowed to have any contact with Sylvie whatsoever. Now, Grant would say things like, I'm unable to function normally without her, not hearing her good mornings or good nights, not talking for hours a day. I truly love this woman. I send her messages every day and I get no response. She is my everything and I will give her my life to simply make her smile. Unable to go very long without contact with Sylvie, though, Grant convinced his mother to let him use her cell phone so he could contact her. Chad was furious about this when he found out about this communication, and he ultimately followed through with his initial promise during the agreement to come back home, and he kicked Grant out of the house, cutting him off. You know, sometimes tough love is all that will get through to people. They just really need to hit rock bottom, and I think this might be the case. But unfortunately, no, it's not enough. Grant snaps. While his mother, Margaret Amato, was working on the computer, Grant came up behind her and shot her in the back of the head with an IWI Jericho 941 pistol. He then waits for his father, and as Chad walks into the kitchen, Grant shoots him twice in the head, one showing that it's execution style while he's kind of on the ground even. Grant then unlocks his father's phone with his thumbprint, sending his brother Cody a message asking him to come over after he finishes his nursing shift. And as Cody walks through the door, Grant shot him just below the eye, leaving him there laying in a fetal position. His lunchbox that he was carrying with him as he came inside was still laying there by his side when the cops come in. Now, the next day, when Cody fails to show up for work, his coworkers call the police. Apparently, Cody had really, he's a very great employee. He really very rarely, if ever, ever had missed a day of work. So it was very odd. So as soon as he missed that day, they called the cops and said, can you go over and please do a wellness check? That was when they walked into this horrific scene. As they assessed the entire home, some things just seemed odd and out of place. It seemed kind of like an almost staged murder-suicide done by Cody. There was a gun found near Cody, but it didn't quite match everything else that was found in the house. It didn't quite match the bullet wounds and whatnot. They also noted that when they came into the house, the garage door was closed, and it was obvious by the blood splatter that when Cody was shot, that the door had to have been opened, so someone had to have shut that door afterwards. Also, Chad, Grant's father, he had a gun in his holster on his waist, but it was facing the wrong way. And then, by the way, where was Grant? You know, obviously he lived at the house, but he wasn't there. Well, Grant was found staying at the local DoubleTree Hotel, safe and sound. He was taken in for questioning, but oddly enough, never asked if his family was okay or, you know, are they alive, anything like that. And he's obviously getting these questions about his family, but he's not asking any questions to say, you know, what's going on, to pretend like maybe he didn't know already. But why wouldn't you ask? So to me, it's because you already, again, it's because you already know the answer because you did it. The interrogators also thought this was weird, especially when he offered the story of kind of driving by his parents' house, seeing police and cameras and whatnot around the home. But instead of going in to see what's going on, he instead says, you know, I'm hungry. So he goes to the local Panera and decides to Google top news stories. And that's where he saw the headline about a triple homicide in his neighborhood. Now, he doesn't try to call his family after seeing this article. You know, just, hey, are you okay? I saw this and I saw this article. Like, something's going on. Let me call my parents. Just make sure that it's not them. But he doesn't do that. He never tries to call anybody in his family because he says, I didn't want to know. As police continued to investigate, they spoke with Cody's girlfriend, who was aware of the ongoing family situation with Grant. She had claimed that Grant had stolen approximately $60,000 from Cody, as well as some guns of Cody's, which Grant sold without permission. While questioning Grant about the family situation, trying to gauge what happened, Grant tells them of this explosive fight that happened when he was kicked out of the house the night before. Now, allegedly, his father had told him that if he ever stepped foot on the property again, that he would kill him. Grant also makes claim that he had seen his father be emotionally and physically violent to his mother before, and so he actually believed that threat of death if he stepped foot on the grounds again. The investigators would eventually show Grant the pictures of his family and how they were found. They want to see if he has any remorse or any kind of reaction for what happens here. But Grant just takes his head, puts it in his hand, and says, my family's been accusing me for months of ruining their lives, stealing, and not following the rules of the home, so I might as well be blamed for this too. He continued to deny he had anything to do with the murders, but admitted that he should be the prime suspect, considering the recent issues, admitting that he had a motive. Now, as they searched his hotel room where Grant was found, they ultimately find credit cards that belong to his father and his brother, which oddly enough already had charges on them after their deaths. The initial questioning of Grant lasts about 8 hours, and it includes various tactics by the investigators to try and get him to confess to the crimes. This includes saying things, some things that are not exactly quite true, in hopes that it would kind of spur the conversation into potential confession. Things like, we know you were there at the time of this because of your cell phone, or that they had fingerprints or video footage. Grant continued to say that he didn't know what happened or that he didn't have any answers. The last-ditch effort was to bring in Jason, the other brother who was living out of town. Jason had already been ruled out as a suspect because they were able to kind of identify from cell phone records and other things that he was nowhere in the vicinity. Jason tells Grant that he knows what happened over the last few months and the struggles that he's been through. He just keeps asking him who else could it have been. He even brings up that they covered up for him for the thefts, which would have easily put him in jail for years. He begs for closure from his brother, but he gets nothing. Just before he leaves the room, he gives him a hug, saying he loves him more than anything in the world, just like he loved his parents and Cody. They had to let Grant go after this interview, though, because he had not yet been formally charged with the crimes, as they were still kind of gathering some of the evidence and researching all of the pieces of the puzzle. As they digested the stories told by Grant during his interview, things just still didn't add up. They do see his cell phone records go to a Publix parking lot after the time of his family's death. And what was he doing there? He was immediately logging in and calling and logging into chat rooms to try and talk to Sylvie. Almost $600 that night from 3 to 4 a.m. was charged to try and speak with Sylvie. Now, where did he get that money from? 2 days later, they officially arrest him at that hotel, charging him with 3 counts of first-degree premeditated murder. As the trial begins, the graphic crime scene photos are shown to the jury. They discuss that this was an obvious stage scene of murder-suicide, placing the handgun near Cody's body and shell casings near the other bodies, but they didn't match the wounds from the victim. They even confirmed that Grant had used his dead father's fingerprint to open the phone and then going into bank accounts and sending funds to Grant's own accounts. The defense claimed that there was no physical evidence in this case, and while Grant certainly had the potential motive for his father, he was very close with his mother and Cody, so he would never have hurt them. During the trial, the investigators are called to the stand. Now, they're coming up and they're saying that Grant never explicitly denied killing his family. He just kept saying during that interview over and over that he has nothing to say, that he doesn't know the answers, that he doesn't know what happened. And the defense actually calls the interrogators out for their tactics to elicit a confession, like the cell phone and the surveillance, things that they didn't have. But they tried to do this to elicit that confession. And they come back with, it was just a simply a tactic that they use sometimes. And in this case, it just didn't work. They also dive into why they didn't seem to investigate or consider Jason for the murders as heavily as they thought Grant did. Even the jurors in this case are allowed to submit questions to the judge. And a lot of that was around Jason and what reviews were done on Jason. Why did it seem like his financials weren't as investigated as much as Grant's? But they felt, you know, that the conversation that they see Jason and Grant having as another tactic that they used, it felt very staged. And it felt almost like Jason was there to potentially set up his brother. Now, the interrogators come back and they say they can confirm Jason's whereabouts during the family murders and that he was nowhere near the family home. But these questions from the jurors especially provided some hope for the defense that maybe there was a glimmer of reasonable doubt being put in the minds of the jurors for this case. Now, the defense goes back and forth on whether or not to put Grant on the stand himself in his own defense, but they ultimately decide not to. They felt that the 8-hour video of Grant during that long interrogation was enough because he had told his story through that video. And they didn't really want to kind of put him in a situation where he may kind of bind himself up by saying the wrong thing or whatnot. You know, his story had already been told numerous times during that 8-hour tape that they had to watch. The discussion, though, does come up about Grant's demeanor during the trial. It's unwavering. Like, just watching some of the videos, he just sits there stone-faced through this entire thing, everything of this. There's only really 2 exceptions that you see any kind of emotion or anything within Grant's eyes. He's notably upset and crying when they showed the pictures of his family. But when they showed pictures of Sylvie, he becomes totally transfixed on those pictures. He never looks away. It's almost like he doesn't blink. It's tunnel vision that just calls him to this woman on the screen, kind of calling out his obsession with this cam girl. Now, the defense and the prosecution rest, and it's now in the hands of the jury. The jury goes and they deliberate over 10 hours and comes back, returning the verdict of guilty on all counts. Next thing that would come up now that he's found guilty is kind of the sentencing. The state of Florida does allow for the death penalty, and it does seem that this case checked all the boxes to pursue the death penalty. It had all the requirements. It had everything. Ultimately, though, they believe that the saving grace for Grant was that Jason Amato's testimony on Grant's behalf. As he gets up and he reads his impact statement, he breaks down on the stand. He discusses that he really, really misses his mom's voice, and that is the one thing that he will miss most. As he finishes, though, he finishes his statement and he gets up to leave. The defense lawyer for Grant stops him and puts him back on the stand and says, "I just have one question. Do you love your brother?" And they go in there like, don't ever ask a question that you don't know the answer to, because at this point, they don't know the emotional state that Jason's in and what kind of answer they're going to give him. But they ask the question, "Do you love your brother?" And Jason says, "Yes." They allow him to go and they hope and pray that this will be enough for the jury to spare Grant's life. Now, every one of the juries had said when they came on board that they were willing to consider the death penalty for the right case. They determined that although an aggravating circumstance was proven for this, they still said that they did not feel he should be given the death penalty, but instead life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, as they read, "Grant, you can stay alive. You're not going to be given the death penalty. Yes, you're going to be life in prison without the possibility of parole, but we're not going to sentence you to death." Grant just sits there again, stone faced. Absolutely no reaction, no hugging of his defense for just sparing his life, nothing. No relief, no crying, nothing. Now, Grant continues to this day to claim his innocence, hoping some millionaire might help get him out of jail so he can feel the sun and breeze on his skin again. Those are his words. He says he will offer them exclusive rights to his story if they're able to get him out. But so far, nobody's claiming that offer. Oh, well. The appeal process, of course, is on the table, and there's some phone calls even that come from Grant while he's in jail, talking to a potential producer, saying that his biggest concern about this trial was the way that his relationship with Sylvie was portrayed. He says that his relationship with Sylvie was not one-sided or all about money, claiming that she had sent him numerous personalized photos and videos, and his defense is claiming that one jury should have never even made it to the final jury. And although that statement doesn't seem to make sense to me, they claim that, everybody said, the death penalty could be on the table for me for the right case. I guess there's one juror that, while they also said that, they also had said, "I don't know about the cost for life in prison, because that's going to be a heavy burden on the taxpayers, and it's going to make them push more for the death penalty versus life." But you know what? With that said, they still voted unanimously that it was life in prison and not the death penalty. So, I don't know that an appeal on that particular reason alone is enough to say, yes, it can. But again, Grant's thing is not even that. His thing is, "I don't like the way that my relationship with Sylvie was portrayed, and that's why I should get an appeal." And it's like, well, wait a second. Does that really matter at this point? I don't know. I don't think so, personally. Well, Grant is serving his life sentence at Holmes Correctional Institution in Florida, and the response to his appeal is still pending from everything that I can find. And one thing to note, Paramount Plus is going to have a three-part docuseries on this case coming out April 16th. So, be sure to watch that if you found this interesting. So what do you think? If you like this podcast, please remember to follow us and subscribe. Find us on Instagram at Valkyrie_truecrime or on TikTok at Valkyrie Podcast One Word. Our website with show information is valkyriepodcast.buzzsprout.com. Look forward to hearing from you on the next case. Bye.